Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. Magnolia Pharmacy is committed to providing superior quality compounds and services. They promote a healthy lifestyle to all their patients. Their staff are highly trained to support patients and practitioners with LDN and other functional medicine therapies. Visit magnoliapharmacy.com. I'd like to introduce my guest today, Dr. Steve Hoffert, who is a doctor of pharmacy, the owner of Magnolia Pharmacy in Magnolia in Texas. Thank you for joining us today, Steve.
Thanks so much for having me.
So can you tell us what inspired you to become a pharmacist?
I've always had an interest in healthcare. I'm sure as you hear with many patients and many of the practitioners you talk to, wanting to make a difference in patients' lives has always been something that's been very valuable to me. Early on after high school, I really wanted to be a heart surgeon, but I actually worked at a local community pharmacy out of high school. And while I was in college and just seeing the impact that a pharmacist could have on patient lives without having to have an appointment, patients just walk in and ask for medical advice and expertise about illness or medications, just something that always intrigued me. So kind of from there, had a lot of interest to go to pharmacy school, didn't want to spend a lot of years in medical school. And that's kind of what really drew me to pharmacy was the ability to basically have a science and healthcare background profession, but also have the ability to have a really close one-on-one access with patients on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. And how long did it take you to open your own pharmacy?
Yeah, I started out working for another local pharmacy in town, and he sold out, and I ended up working at a small grocery store for a while and then realized, okay, this is not what I want to do. So I opened up my own store in 2002. And so this past November, actually had been open for 17 years. Mm-hmm. It's definitely had a lot of ups and downs, but I'll tell you, it is nothing better than one, working for myself, but also two, being able to run a pharmacy practice the way I want to run it.
Mm-hmm. So in that 17 years that you've had your pharmacy, how have things changed in the world of pharmacy in that time?
That's a wonderful question. You know, pharmacy is really unique. I think the information age, having the access to the internet and people to have instant access to some phenomenal educational material, people coming in doing their homework. I think the biggest change is patients are more informed and patients want access to quality information now. People are more in tune to their own healthcare. People are more in tune to what they want. And I think people ask a lot more questions. I remember early on as a pharmacist, doctor wrote the prescription, you gave them the medication, you really didn't say a lot, and they were out the door. Well, now people come in with not only a prescription, but then they also come in with a list of questions and ask, you know, what is something for? How does it work? What should I watch for? What are drug interactions? And I think patients are a lot more informed and expect a lot more. And I think that's the neat thing about being a pharmacist is patients have a very easy access to us, and the ability of patients to ask questions and get a medical expert, especially on medications, and a lot of that stuff is done nowadays. There's no cost to it. And so they can get access is a real big thing. So I think the big demand now is to stay up to date as a pharmacist on the latest treatment trends and, you know, not even just medications, but technologies and different treatment options that are out there so that we're better informed to answer our patients' questions.
Mm. I mean, you're certainly right there with the age of technology. I mean, years ago, if you wanted to find anything out medical, well, in England anyway, you would go to the library and you would try and find a book that you were looking for. And they would say, I'm sorry, we haven't got it in at the moment, but if you come back in 10 days, we will have it for you. Well,
Now you can just put things into a search engine and there's the information, you've got it. So it's very easy for patients. I know some doctors don't like patients using the internet, but if you have a condition, I mean, like I've got MS, you can go on the internet and you can find out just about anything you want to know about MS. So I can understand patients coming to you with their questions. I'm not saying they're replacing you, they're not, but they're finding the information to have the questions to bring to you to ask for the answers. So everybody is more informed and it's easier and quicker than it ever was back in the day, isn't it?
And patients are looking for validity, and that's exactly right. So patients come in with a certain level of education, and the one thing we've found is some go to quality sites. Once again, the LDN Research Trust site is phenomenal, great educational. It's a great example of a place that has good quality science-based information for patients. But some patients come in and have gone to some other sites, and it's about any drug, and have read. And sometimes you have to do a lot of education with patients so that you can set realistic expectations, give them quality information. And that's really one of the things where a human healthcare practitioner versus the internet or technology nowadays is so vital to know the information, because patients come in lots of times with very good science basis to their questions and their knowledge, but then some come in that are really off the mark, that's not valid, that it's something they read on the internet. And that aspect of it is very important for a healthcare practitioner to be able to educate that patient about truth and fact versus what's invalid or what hasn't been proved. That's a great, great point.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are still people that end up coming to us saying, I have found a website that is selling LDN. I don't have to have a prescription. I can have it sent from several different countries. That's all right, isn't it? You know, well, no, it's not all right. the whole point with a prescription medication is it's a prescription only for a reason. You know, it's not paracetamol or aspirin. It is a drug, be it a low dose drug, but it is still a drug. And the quality and the testing that you pharmacists have to go through, if you buy it from somewhere, you're buying anything. And we have on the website, there is a copy of a letter from the MHRA. They're the medicines regulatory body in England. And it was something like of drugs seized that had been shipped into England without a prescription. It was like 80-something% were counterfeit. Most of them were harmless. They didn't have any drugs in them at all. But some of them were lethal. They had very dangerous ingredients and they still weren't what they said they were. But I mean, there are counterfeiters out there that can produce packaging. The blister packs, the capsules look the same. And if you are somebody that isn't able to test what you've purchased and it looks like the real thing, you've got no way of knowing, only the fact that you have bought it off the internet and you really don't know what it is. I find it very scary.
It's extremely scary, and I'll second that. When patients come in and ask the same thing, I've got something off the internet, or ordered it from another state or even out of the country, you have no clue what you're taking. And there's so many claims to what's out there. And I'll back up here. There's been many studies done in the States about many prescription drugs, whether compounded or even not compounded, ordered through the internet. And over 50% were found to be counterfeits. And you're exactly right. If you want to try a therapy, something like low-dose naltrexone, to see if it actually works. I mean, to me, I could think of nothing worse of taking something and thinking, oh, it didn't work, or I got no benefit. And it's not because it didn't work. It's because you maybe didn't even get low-dose naltrexone. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really kind of scary when you think about it. I don't think people are aware of that. They're just looking for, you know, maybe an easy access to something. But you're right. There's so much that goes into producing and compounding quality compounds, but especially low-dose naltrexone. It's a very meticulous way it has to be made. It's such low dose, and it's very important to get it from a quality, reputable source so that you know what you're getting is quality and is not going to cause any harm, but somebody will get a therapeutic benefit.
Mm-hmm. And just to tell our listeners, how often does your LDN have to be tested? How do you know that what you have produced is what it says it is?
So let's kind of back up the process. Okay. So we as compounding pharmacies must procure our what are called APIs, active pharmaceutical ingredients, from FDA registered chemical suppliers here in the United States. I'm not going to lie, I'm very picky. There's one particular company that I use that they put theirs through multiple third-party testing before it even comes to my store. So by the time I have it, every single batch of the pure powder of low-dose naltrexone that I receive has been third-party tested to make sure it's of the right percentage, that there's no impurities, that it's 100% pure. And then from there, we make our own capsules from that quality-tested product. And then we, random times throughout the year, we send out what we make to not only check that the low-dose naltrexone is in there, or naltrexone's in there, but then I want to make sure that me and my staff have the ability to make quality capsules in milligram and microgram doses of naltrexone so that the patient is getting what the doctor's ordered. Mm-hmm. So once again, the active chemical coming into my store is tested multiple times, and then we test ourselves to make sure we make quality products based upon the strength that the doctor writes. Mm-hmm.
And that's really important, isn't it? I mean, especially when you have such low doses. Now, there are people who also say that they can dissolve a 50 milligram tablet. You must have heard of all this several times. But when you are talking like 0.001, it is such a small dose. There is no way, in my opinion, that could be 100% accurate in such a small dose if people were trying to do that. And of course, we always have to go by best practice, and doing it yourself isn't. But how easy would you think it would be to make a dose yourself accurately in such small doses?
No, I cringe when I hear people grinding tablets and trying to make their own product. I admire people in terms of that's the only way they can get access to something or cost savings. But I'll tell you, when you get down to some of the micro dosing that we do into like the 3, 4, 5 microgram doses, not milligram doses, as you mentioned, like 0.005, mm-hmm. It's extremely difficult to make. And I'll tell you, I relate it a lot to when we compound thyroid. Compounding thyroid is probably one of the most difficult things to do because it's microgram doses. And obviously when we do some of the microgram dosing of naltrexone, the same thing. And I will tell you, there's definitely an art to that. It takes a lot of quality, precision, analytical weights and balances to be able to weigh that out properly. And then it even goes into not more than that, but it kind of has to be diluted, and then it has to be packed into capsules, equally dispersed into the capsules. And it is a very, very difficult task to complete and repeat that time in and time out.
Mm-hmm. I would think from a pharmacy point of view, correct me if I'm wrong, that the microdoses probably take you longer to make than like a 4.5, because you've got to, it's not as easy because it's so tiny. Or is it just the same?
It really takes about the same. What makes it longer, the way that you have to make this work is we have very high dollar precision balances that we can weigh out small amounts of powders. Mm-hmm. The problem is when it comes to making microgram dose capsules of naltrexone, we actually have to take the initial powder. We have to create what's called a diluent or an aliquot of that. We have to dilute it down, and then we use that dilution then to make the capsules. So actually making the capsules is about the same, but there's just a lot of skill and techniques that has to be made in making that naltrexone dilution. Mm-hmm. They're further diluted to make the capsules. So you're exactly right. There's a lot that goes into it, and you have to be very precise and mm-hmm. specific.
So the process takes a little bit longer to actually do. Okay. So what forms of LDN do you do? You're talking about capsules there. Do you do other forms of LDN?
Yeah, so we do capsules. We do sublingual dissolvable tablets or troches. We've done naltrexone topical and some transdermal bases that allow for systemic absorption. We also do a lot of topical naltrexone for dermatological conditions. We've also used some intravaginal naltrexone for some pelvic floor pain. But those are the most common areas that we've used the low-dose naltrexone for our patients.
Can you do sterile preparations like eye drops?
We can. We actually do sterile. I have not done any of, I have not compounded any sterile yet, but I have actually some friends of mine that have recommended us, we need to look into it, to use the sterile eye drops for dry eyes. I have
Yes.
not done that yet, but that's something that we're probably going to look into doing here in 2020.
Well, that seems to say it's the latest craze doesn't sound quite right, but it's something that doctors are looking into prescribing. It seems to work really well. And there are quite a few dentists prescribing LDN too. Do you have any dentists that send scripts to you?
I do have dentists that send scripts, but I haven't had any send me for low dose naltrexone. That's definitely something we need to look into, that's for sure.
And do you have any pain specialists in your area in Texas?
I do have some pain specialists. We have a few that we've talked into and are working with them and doing some microdosing of low dose naltrexone, trying to start it low with patients who are currently on pain medications. We're doing that in combination with some CBD hemp oil products. And so far, we've had some pretty good luck in terms of dramatically reducing the amount of opioids that a person's taking. So, in that regard, we've seen some good luck so far.
And you were talking about the topical creams for skin conditions. I mean, psoriasis seems to be, a really good responder to that method. I know quite a few people who've got Hailey-Hailey's disease, which is supposedly rare, but I do know quite a few from the different Hailey-Hailey groups. Have you got any patients with Hailey-Hailey's disease that have used a transdermal cream or a topical lotion or anything for that condition?
Yeah, I don't think I have any patients with Hailey-Hailey's disease. We've got a lot of dermatological conditions we've used naltrexone for, but I don't think I have any of that patient population yet.
Okay. And what about psoriasis? Have you got psoriasis patients?
Yes, a lot of psoriasis patients. Matter of fact, that's probably been one of the biggest areas for 2019. We had the best success was actually working with our dermatologist in doing oral low dose naltrexone. I initially kind of got in the door with some of them about using it topical. I think they felt a little safe doing it topically versus orally. Knowing how it works, I'm like, I kind of wish you would consider it oral. And I've gotten more and more. I've got quite a few patients now who are taking it orally for psoriasis. You know, the thing we've just found is you've got to counsel them that typically that's one of the slower things to resolve with low dose naltrexone. It can take up to a year. But I'll tell you, we've got quite a few patients on oral low dose naltrexone for psoriasis. We've had a few with really good luck. I mean, some patients for a number of topical skin conditions, I really feel like so much of that is just more of an overall manifestation of inflammation within the body. And just by doing oral naltrexone, whether it be eczema, psoriasis, or any other of the chronic kind of inflammatory, itchy conditions on the skin, so many patients do well, and there's some within several months of low dose naltrexone orally do extremely well in terms of getting rashes and the itching to clear up.
With the psoriasis, swapping from doing it on the skin as taking it orally, do you still think in some cases when the psoriasis is really bad that you could do both?
We've done some for both. We'll start patients out on topical. Lots of times when we do compounded topical low dose naltrexone, we don't do it by itself for psoriasis. We will do it in combinations with other things. From our practice, I've seen tremendous benefit in the itching aspect when it's applied topically. Obviously, it has a whole system of mechanisms that work differently when you take it by mouth. But topical, we've seen great success in doing it for itching. And then we will mix some other ingredients in there with it to basically kind of have an additive effect for the psoriasis. We've mixed in like topical cyanocobalamin has been shown to be well, topical ketotifen, topical zinc pyrithiate has also done really, really well. So we'll mix some or all of those together in combination. Mm-hmm. And the great thing is you get good benefit in terms of the psoriasis with the redness, the itching, and the plaquing, and you don't have to use a steroid. Mm. And that's really our goal, so we don't have to use long-term topical steroids.
Well, steroids thin the skin anyway, so they're not really good news, are they, over a long period of time?
No.
So,
not at all.
But would you use the topical cream and an oral at the same time? That was what I was asking, if it was really bad, using both.
So there's two schools of thought. I've got some patients we've done that on. In pharmacy school, though, we were once taught that when you put something on topically and you take something by mouth, that's kind of a recipe for having the body kind of create an allergic reaction to something. So I've always tried, I can name some other drugs that we've done some similar things with compounds. I try not to do both. Mm-hmm. I think it's okay for the patient to do it because the dosing is so low, but we do not do that very often, no.
Okay. And you mentioned CBD there, and I mean, that is a hot topic right now. it seems there are lots of different studies and trials and tests going on using it, but it works synergistically with LDN really, really well. We've had Professor Angus Dalgleish talking about it, using it alongside of LDN for cancer. There are other doctors using it really well for autoimmune diseases. But other than CBD and LDN, what would you say are the top four supplements you would recommend to use alongside of LDN?
That's fabulous, because I will tell you, when we go out and talk to practitioners and patients about low-dose naltrexone, low-dose naltrexone is one piece of the puzzle. Now, it's a really big piece of the puzzle because it is so phenomenal for reducing inflammation. But to me, so many patients come to us in inflamed states. And if you look at so many of our health conditions nowadays, they're very inflammation-driven. So anything that we can do to reduce inflammation, I think, is critical. So that ties in supplements that reduce inflammation. So our gold standards that we hear, one, we need to optimize vitamin D. That's super critical. We recommend vitamin D to a lot of patients. The key is, if we recommend a dose, you just got to go have yourself checked at least in the next 3 months. So that's the first thing I would say. Second thing is adequate amounts of a high quality, very pure fish oil or an omega-3 product. I think that's super critical for controlling inflammation. The next big thing that we typically recommend is a lot of probiotics. A very good high-end, high-quality probiotic, I think, is important. Those are the three biggest ones that we typically recommend in conjunction with low-dose naltrexone, or just for an overall anti-inflammatory lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I'll say isn't so much a supplement. I've got 10 other supplements I could recommend. The other thing would be just, and this works with the low-dose naltrexone, especially in terms of the gut and the CBD together, you mentioned the benefits we see there, and just really eating an anti-inflammatory, more Mediterranean diet-based diet on a daily basis to reduce overall body inflammation. You know, I think if people work on diet, take the low-dose naltrexone, add the supplements, get good quality sleep, reduce stress, I'll tell you, the success stories are amazing of how people's lives can be changed, how they can get their lives back and be productive again in society and get their jobs back. And it really is amazing. It really makes being a healthcare practitioner really what it's all about in terms of wanting to help patients on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Well, the next question was going to be about diet. So you beat me to it there. But gluten is a really big thing these days for a lot of people with autoimmune diseases, along with dairy. I mean, what would you say to somebody who asked you, you know, why should I cut out gluten? What would be your reply?
Well, the problem is the gluten we eat today is not the gluten that our ancestors ate. And it has been so genetically hybridized and changed to be so inflammatory that unfortunately, you know, our guts were not made to handle the proteins that are now in the gluten that is in our standard diets, whether it be Western diets or even across the world nowadays. And unfortunately, anytime that we put something in our gastrointestinal tract that either causes inflammation or causes the gastrointestinal tract to basically open up and let undigested food particles in that trigger inflammation, once again, we're working against the whole premise behind what low-dose naltrexone does. It reduces inflammation, it controls it and modulates that whole inflammatory system. So that's the part is I tell patients all the time, you know, you can take low-dose naltrexone, but if you don't at least try to work on diet, you know, we're kind of working against each other. And I'll tell you, the patients that try to, once again, work on diet, and you mentioned gluten especially, if there's any one thing I would say for a patient who's got inflammation, and I'm not talking about cut down, I'm talking about eliminate gluten from your diet, that in conjunction, like you said, with something like low-dose naltrexone can be miraculous on a lot of conditions, especially our autoimmune things like Hashimoto's and Crohn's and some of those type items that we use the low-dose naltrexone and see the most benefit from. It's that combination of no gluten and the low-dose naltrexone that we see the best benefit.
And what about children? Have you got any children on LDN?
Yes, actually, I have a pediatrician that we work real closely with. She does some things I don't even understand, but the best way I can explain it is she does a genetic panel on children that get brought to her, and she looks for children who either genetically disposed to inflammation or who already have inflammatory markers in their blood. And what she looks to do is she looks to minimize the inflammatory aspect or the negative health consequence that can happen when vaccines are given to children. She gives vaccines, but she actually looks for children with inflammation already or genetic markers for inflammation. So she puts them on an anti-inflammatory diet. She puts them on topical transdermal low-dose naltrexone. She tries to get all that under control, and then she implements the vaccine on a slowed down process. She gives vaccines, but she gives them very slowly in a more timely manner so the body doesn't overstimulate or hyperstimulate the immune system. Mm-hmm. It's really quite amazing, and she's got a lot of patients that she does this with, and she uses low-dose naltrexone in a lot of kids. So we do quite a bit of that, actually.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, we've just about run out of time, Steve. Would you like to tell our listeners who could get to Magnolia, who would like to come and speak to you, where you are and what hours you're open, etc.?
Sure. So we're Magnolia Pharmacy. We're in Magnolia, Texas. We are only licensed in Texas, but I welcome any calls anybody ever has. That's kind of one of the things we pride ourselves on here. Myself and I have several other pharmacists on staff that are very educated about low-dose naltrexone. We're glad to answer any questions. But we're open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday, 9 to 2. We're closed on Sunday. And you can always reach me anytime via email at steveh@magnoliapharmacy.com.
And thank you very much for sharing your experience with us today, Steve. It was a really interesting show.
Thank you, Linda. It's quite an honor to even get interviewed by you. So thank you very, very much for having me today.
Thank you. Magnolia Pharmacy is committed to providing superior quality compounds and services. They promote a healthy lifestyle to all their patients. Their staff are highly trained to support patients and practitioners with LDN and other functional medicine therapies. Visit magnoliapharmacy.com. New for 2020, our LDN radio shows will be available on Spotify and iTunes. They will also be transcribed and added to our website, ldnresearchtrust.org. Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.